Your concert billboard for Tuesday, March 4th. The Gale Storm Quartet will be at Grasso's in Cold Spring Harbor, 7 p.m. The Hoodoo Loungers will be at Treme Blues and Jazz Bar in Islip, 7 p.m. Bobby Q and Batchog welcomes Jack's Waterfall, Eddie. The King Cobras will be at Big Daddy's, Massapequa. Looking ahead to Wednesday, March 5th, Los Lobos will be at The Space in Westbury.
Are you a fan of the bands you hear about on Concert Billboard? Then listen to the station that actually plays them, WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, and on your mobile device through the TuneIn app.
And it's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. That means it's time, once again, for Off the Wall. evening. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And we have a bunch of things to talk about tonight. Oh boy, do we ever. And if all goes well, maybe we can take some phone calls too. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Our signal is back, as we mentioned last week. Some people are saying the signal is better than it was before. Not so sure our signal is better. In fact, I'm having some trouble hearing us right now in our studio. But I think the interference issues might be a little better. And, you know, it's interesting. The reason that might be happening is because we were off the air, essentially, for a couple of weeks where our signal was a mere fraction of what it normally is. And what might have happened, my theory, is that people might have heard the other station in Connecticut, that tiny 45-watt station, so clearly that they actually got angry and complained. And as a result, maybe that station did something. I would like to think that was the case. It's not enough. They still are interfering a bit, but less so, I've noticed. So progress. Progress is possible. Wow, even in the places where you don't think progress is possible. How about that? But then there are places where progress doesn't seem to be possible at all. And I think a lot of that is just in our attitudes, our mentality, our habits, our stupidity. Yeah, let's go to Georgia. Our Georgia, the one here in this country. But we'll go to Ukraine and talk about that in just a little bit. But I want to get geared up for that. I want to get good and angry first. So there's this guy in Georgia who last November, get this, shot and killed a 72-year-old Alzheimer's patient who rang his front doorbell. And this guy is not going to get charged with a crime because he feared for his life. Yeah, they're using this defense everywhere. It's only the latest case to raise questions about the legality of asserting self-defense in the fatal shooting. Colusa County District Attorney Herbert Franklin said he was declining to file charges against Joe Hendricks. Hendricks was concerned that if this man got by him, his girlfriend in the house would be defenseless. Really, this is where we're going. The helpless female screaming in a corner, being overpowered by a doddering 72-year-old Alzheimer's patient. It's just, it's almost too easy, these cases that are coming up, you know? What next, somebody in a wheelchair? Being shot dead because, well, I was afraid he was going to run over my girlfriend in the wheelchair. You would have done the same thing. Stand your ground. Authorities say Ronald Westbrook suffered from Alzheimer's disease, walked up to Hendricks, yeah, this is harder to say than it should be, Hendricks's front door in Chickamauga, Georgia. That's not hard to say. Chickamauga, Georgia. Wow. Carrying a flashlight and some mail, and began ringing the doorbell. Now, Westbrook lived about 3 miles away, and after ringing the doorbell, he walked to the side and rear of the house, according to the prosecutor. Now, Hendricks then took a gun and confronted Westbrook, ordering him to stop, but Westbrook kept advancing. Hendricks then shot Westbrook once in the chest, killing him. Westbrook's widow, Deanne Westbrook, says it's like Hendricks is getting away with killing an innocent man. Well, he did get away with killing an innocent man. It's not like he did that. He did get away with it because I think this 72-year-old Alzheimer's patient was not guilty of anything other than being an Alzheimer's patient and being confused. And since one is being confused, something worthy of a death sentence. I remember this. I was a kid. Long time ago, yeah, I was a kid, and I remember this old lady coming into our house. Yeah, it was the weirdest thing. We were inside, and all of a sudden, there's this strange old lady inside our house. And she's kind of like laughing softly to herself. And just moving very slow. It was the scariest thing in the world for, what was I, 10, 11? It was pretty scary. But it wasn't something that made you want to shoot the person. I guess it was a different time back then. And yeah, it was basically the same scenario, except this person actually gained access to the house. I guess the door was unlocked or something. Turned out to be the next door neighbor who apparently had Alzheimer's. And it happened a couple of times, actually. Well, I don't think she made it past the front door the second time, because I think we learned and started locking the front door. But yeah, things like this do happen. Strangers ring your doorbell. Words get exchanged. Sometimes physicality ensues. And in all of those cases, having that gun at your side does no good whatsoever. It makes things a whole lot worse. How many times do we have to keep learning this? You know, you say to yourself, yeah, it makes me safe. No, it doesn't. It makes you an idiot. It makes you dangerous. It makes you somebody who thinks you have more power than you actually are entitled to. Gives you false confidence, and makes you really want to settle the score, because you know you have the decisive word. That's what happened in Florida with the kids playing rap music, and the guy didn't like it. Winds up killing one of them. And even though he has not been found guilty of murder, he was found guilty of attempted murder of the other three in the car, his life is ruined. He'll be in prison probably for the rest of his life, no matter what happens at this point. So, you know, it's not like it's a one-sided thing. Everybody loses. It's stupidity. It's got nothing to do with the right to bear arms. It's got to do with how you live your life and the value you place upon certain things. You know, there's a difference between having weapons for particular purposes and brandishing them all the time and just waiting for a situation to occur. Situations are going to occur. I had three of them on my way over here today that I could have brandished a gun and well, I could have made it much more of a situation. I missed the red light at Bennett's Road. You know, that really angered me. I wanted to shoot it. I did. I really wanted to. I always miss that light. Why is that? What does that light have against me? I'll show it. I'll show all the lights. It doesn't do you any good. And here's another case. These cases really tear me apart. Eight-year-old Cincinnati boy fatally shot in the chest on Saturday while one of his brothers was playing with a loaded handgun that he thought was a BB gun. You know, no matter what, if it's an air gun, a water gun, it's not good to, well, I guess water guns, you have to sort of point them at people, but kids don't know. They're 8 years old, for God's sake. Why do they have access to this kind of thing? Cincinnati Police Lieutenant Don Luck told the Cincinnati Inquirer that the three brothers were visiting their uncle in the city's Prince Hall neighborhood. Prince Hill neighborhood, rather, when they found the loaded gun and one pulled the trigger. Luck said no charges are expected against the children. Against the children, yeah. What are you going to charge an 8-year-old with? Not having the proper permit? What a stupid statement. Of course you're not going to charge the kids. The kids' lives are ruined anyway. Can you imagine that? Knowing that you killed somebody at 8 years old? You killed one of your brothers? Someone's going to have to carry that around with them the rest of their lives. The other kid's going to be a witness to that. And the third was cut short. So obviously, people in charge of these weapons are not capable of being in charge of a TV remote. And nothing said here about charges against those people. And charges against all of us for allowing these things to happen in the first place. Clearly, this is bad. And it's not isolated. It's happening all the time. I could probably read at least one story per week similar to this. Because people are irresponsible and stupid when it comes to this kind of thing. More times than I'm comfortable with, for sure. Yeah, there are a lot of responsible people out there. I'm not denying that. But when you encourage the irresponsible people to just brandish weapons everywhere, leave them lying around so kids can find them, of course these things are going to happen. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. There's a great piece, actually, that appeared in the New York Times. I don't have time to read the whole thing. But it's an open letter to the chief counsel of the Idaho State Legislature, written by a guy named Greg Hampikian. And basically asking a question, in light of the bill permitting guns on our state's college and university campuses, which is likely to be approved by the state House of Representatives in the coming days, I have a matter of practical concern that I hope you can help with. When may I shoot a student? I'm a biology professor, not a lawyer, and I've never considered bringing a gun to work until now, but since many of my students are likely to be armed, I thought it'd be a good idea to even the playing field. Yeah, that's the thinking, right? Makes sense. I've had encounters with disgruntled students over the years, some of whom seem pretty upset. But I always assumed that when they reach into their backpacks, they were going for a pencil. Since I carry a pen to lecture, I did not feel outgunned, and because there are no working sharpeners in the lecture hall, why is that? The most they could get off is a single point. But now that we'll all be packing heat, I would like legal instruction in the rules of classroom engagement. It goes on. It's brilliant. Of course, the gun people don't like it at all. They don't think it's funny. But it touches upon that very attitude that we're talking about right now. Where you have to outgun your opponent. You have to always expect you're going to be attacked. Very, very unhealthy. And yeah, you know, you can say that, if I don't carry a gun, someone's going to attack. It can happen. Someone can attack you. Yes, the bad guys will have guns. That is true. That's always going to be true. But do you want to build a culture, a society, where we're constantly shooting each other, where innocent people are shooting other innocent people, where we're always living just a breath away from ending somebody's life because of a glance, an approach, a word? You know, which is worse? And the bad guys are still going to have the guns. And you know what? They're going to be able to use them better than you in the first place. They've had more practice. Oh, yeah, I guess this means people are going to want to practice more. No, it's not going to work. Not like that. Again, nothing to do with right to bear arms. It's about the way you live your lives, the responsibility, what we encourage people to do, what we encourage people to value. And this is not working. All right, there. Now, I'm riled up sufficiently enough to talk about Ukraine and things like that. Although I do want to stop over in Pakistan for a moment. Can I do that? All right. This story really stuck out at me. 11 people were killed on Saturday. Of course, you never hear about these things, do you? 11 people were killed Saturday when two vans carrying a polio vaccination team were hit by a roadside bomb in the Khyber province. Or Khyber Agency, I think is what they call it. Pakistan's Northern Khyber Agency. Is that what they call it, really? Among the dead was an 8-year-old child. Not a good week for 8-year-olds, is it? 12 other people were wounded. 10 of the fatalities were tribal policemen. Call them Khazadars. Though the security forces and militants engaged the attackers in the gun battle, the militants escaped. The child was caught in crossfire. Now, why is this interesting? Well, you have to ask yourself, why? Why in the world are militants attacking a polio vaccination team? Seems a bit weird. Are they against vaccinations? Are they pro-polio? What exactly is going on here? Well, Here's what's going on here. Anti-polio campaigns have been targeted by militants in Pakistan since U.S. intelligence officials used a fake vaccination program to help in their hunt for Osama bin Laden in 2011. Under cover of the program, the CIA sought to collect DNA samples from relatives of the al-Qaeda leader to verify his presence in a compound in Abbottabad. And since July of 2012, at least 22 polio workers have been killed. So, yeah, you know what? This is the price you pay for being irresponsible again. For using a program that's meant to benefit people for your own motives, whether they be good motives or bad motives, innocent people have to pay the cost of that deception. So, you know, no matter how you feel about getting Osama bin Laden, I think most people would want him to have been captured. Are there better ways than impersonating completely innocent, non-involved people that now have to pay the price? Wasn't thought through, was it? Or if it was thought through, I guess they just didn't care. All right. Now I'm really riled. So John Kerry is in Kiev right now, and he's been warning of the consequences for Russia after the Ukraine invasion. You know, I've got a few remarks on this, and they're not the most popular remarks that you're likely to hear. It's not like the entire country of Ukraine is being invaded. It's kind of deceptive to say an invasion of Ukraine is underway. Kiev is not being touched. The West is not being touched. What is happening is that certain areas with strong Russian contingents that have historically been allied to Russia are under occupation. And that's not a surprise. It's not a surprise at all. But let's look at what John Kerry is doing. He's over there right now. He warned Russia on Sunday it should rethink its military intervention in Ukraine, warning of possible economic consequences and embarrassment on the world stage. And, you know, my prediction, I don't think the economic consequences are going to be that severe for Russia, and I don't think they're going to be very embarrassed either. Now, Kerry said the U.S. Was absolutely prepared to boycott the upcoming G8 summit in Sochi, which is where the Winter Olympics were just held. And I believe the Paralympics are about to start. Suggested that visa bans, asset freezes, and other acts to isolate Russia and the trade or business realm could motivate Putin to act. It's only going to hurt people, regular people. Visa bans just make it impossible for people to travel from one country to another. Great. What does that accomplish? We're not trying to make this a battle between East and West. We're not trying to make this a Cold War. Nobody wants this kind of action. There are many ways to resolve this kind of problem. If Russia wants to be a G8 country, it needs to behave like a G8 country. Well, yeah, they are behaving like a G8 country, aren't they? Isn't that what G8 countries do, is invade other countries when it suits them? So, to understand the situation a little better, one only has to look at a map. And when you look at that map, you'll see that the Crimea is in a very key location. In fact, the Crimea is where the Russians have their Black Sea Fleet. Yeah, they still have the Black Sea Fleet in a different country. It was part of the agreement. Except that agreement has started to dissolve a little bit. And over the years, as Ukraine became more and more westernized, there was a distancing with traditional Russian relations, and that led to some changes in the way things were being viewed by the people, by the politicians. And that's one of the reasons why Viktor Yanukovych was moving more towards Russia. For one thing, there was a lease for the port that, or the base actually, that the Black Sea Fleet uses. And it was announced by Viktor Yushchenko. This gets very complicated and confusing. Viktor Yushchenko and Viktor Yanukovych are very serious opponents of each other. And this goes way back to the Orange Revolution in 2004, when they were running against each other. I don't know if you remember this, but Viktor Yushchenko was poisoned in that campaign. Viktor Yanukovych initially won, and the Orange Revolution took place and overturned the results of that election because it was viewed to be fraudulent. So, basically, Viktor Yushchenko was in power for a bit of time, and of course, as it always happens, fell out of favor, came back into power at one other point, and I believe it was as recently as 2010 when he said that the lease would not be extended beyond 2017. 2017! And the Russians would have to get out of there on a very key strategic location. Well, then, Viktor Yanukovych won the next election, and what did he do? He extended the lease for another 25 years in exchange for some really good deals on gas from Russia. So there's a bit of controversy there, and as we all have seen, he also proposed moving closer to Russia and away from the EU, and that's what sparked the entire uprising that led to his ouster. An ouster that, it's debatable whether or not it was technically legal. So, when you look at it that way, you see the concern, at least, that Russia would have towards that region, and why, yeah, of course they're going to do something about it. Think about what the United States would do. Let's say our base in Cuba. Yeah, our base in Cuba somehow was threatened. Why can't Cuba just say, you know what? You got to go. Why don't they do that? We are paying them. We've been paying them from the start when we decided that we were entitled to a base in Cuba. They have never cashed the checks, from what I understand. But clearly, that belongs to Cuba. Now, if they were to say, that's it, 2017, you got to be out of here, I would bet that there would be all kinds of blockades and ships and troops and things like that over there within hours. It's not hard to figure out. Now, add into this the people of the region. Yeah, you wouldn't get much American support down in Cuba, that's for sure. But in Crimea, you do get a lot of Russian support. A ton of it. They outnumber the Ukrainians by a significant margin. Ukrainians. They outnumber them by a significant margin, as they do in other border areas in the east. But we're not talking about those right now. We're talking about the Crimea, that region. So you have a situation where the majority of people there want Russian intervention. Maybe they even want to be part of Russia. Certainly they would want to be independent of Ukraine. They do not agree with what's going on in the West. So how is it different? How is it different, this country or this region wanting to separate itself from the policies in the capital? How is it different than the people in the capital saying, we don't like the policies of the government, and we're going to replace it? Not through an elected means, we're just going to drive them out of power.
And, you know, I think they're the good guys. I really do. Although, when they started firing guns, a lot of innocent people died as well. They don't really talk about that. A lot of cops died by gunshots. So it wasn't just the authorities firing on the crowds. There was some firing back. And you can't say it was all justified. So you have a situation now where Russia has moved in to Crimea and is protecting their interests with the support of the people in that region. Why is this an issue? Well, it's an issue because the United States really, really cares about this. Why does the United States care so much? We can care about Georgia when it happened over there. And we can talk about that a little bit as well, because that's an interesting case. It continues to be interesting. But this is more strategic. And, you know, we'd have a lot more of a firm footing in morality if we had stayed out of it a bit. I mean, I saw, what was John McCain's bobblehead doing over there last year? I saw him on TV addressing crowds in Ukraine. Why? This is a Ukrainian issue. Don't you have better things to be doing back home? You have John Kerry saying things like what he said on Face the Nation on Sunday. This is an act of aggression that is completely trumped up in terms of its pretext. It's really 19th century behavior in the 21st century. Talking about how it's wrong to invade countries based on dubious information. Do you not read your own history of the past 10 or so years? How can somebody say that with a straight face? We invaded Iraq for what reason exactly? There weren't any Americans over there. Russians, yeah, there are Russians in Crimea, so you have that. You can say you're protecting them. It's a bit of a reach. I don't think they're under any threat right now. But yeah, you can say the majority of people in that region identify themselves as Russian. That gives us some moral high ground. United States, well, we don't like Saddam Hussein, and we want the oil. Iraq is pretty far away from the United States. Crimea is right next door to Russia. So, you know, you don't have to agree that it's the right thing to do, but let's stop pretending that we don't understand it. Of course, it's going to be a big issue. How do you think Russia would feel when their Black Sea Fleet gets kicked out of Crimea, and next thing you see John McCain riding on top of a tank over there because, well, they're friendly to the United States, and here's a nice base for you guys to use? Of course they're concerned about that. They can pretty easily relocate. Not easily, but they are planning. There's a base called Novorossiysk or something like that. It's a port on the Black Sea, and it's where they could move to if they really had to. But I think they're more concerned with having an American base or a Western base right next door. It makes sense for them to be concerned about that. Now, here's a piece from the Globe and Mail, The Historical Ties Binding Crimea and Russia. Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula, where pro-Russian sentiment parallels suspicion of the Western-leaning interim government in Kiev, has been fought over and occupied and fitted out with garrisons as far back as Roman times in the first century. Strategically located between the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov, it was a valuable prize for ancient and modern empires that wanted to control the route for riches of the East, which is now energy, to make their way to European markets. The military and commercial competition over Crimea now takes the form of face-offs between armed Russian loyalists and Russian troops and a much feebler Ukrainian military. But the political loyalties of this peninsula have long been clear. In the previous Ukrainian presidential election in 2009, the naval port city of Sevastopol voted for Moscow's ousted ally, Viktor Yanukovych, by a margin of 84%. All of Crimea voted 78% for Mr. Yanukovych, whose score nationally was barely 49%. There are big differences here. It's almost like they're two different countries. The ties to Russia are more than historical and cultural. Russia took possession of the peninsula, which is the size of Belgium, in 1783. The majority of its population of 2 million people, 58%, still identifies itself as Russian, although it was handed by Nikita Khrushchev to the Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic as a gift in 1954. So, yeah, that's interesting. That's why it's part of the Ukraine. Did you know that? When it was all part of the Soviet Union. One day, Khrushchev said, you know what, Ukraine, Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic, take Crimea. Take Crimea from, what is it, the Russian Soviet? I don't know what they call the Russian part, but we're just going to call it Ukrainian Soviet Socialist Republic. It's a part of that now. Doesn't make any bit of difference. It's symbolic because we're all the same. We're all part of the Soviet. And here in the United States, they were all the Soviets. They were all the same. It didn't matter. It didn't make a bit of difference to anybody. It was symbolic. But when Ukraine became independent, all of a sudden it was a different country. But that didn't change the fact that it was still mostly Russian. So, yeah, it's kind of a weird move by Khrushchev to just hand it over like that. But it's not like there was a war for independence and this is a Ukrainian enclave or anything like that. That is how it became to be part of Ukraine, just by a stroke of a pen. Continuing with this article, there are ties in blood, literally, during the Crimean War in the mid-1800s. When Britain and France fought the Russian Empire over Crimea, an estimated 1 million Russians died. The cost to both sides was high, and its epic battles involving the British Light Brigade inspired poems that are still read today. The Second World War brought more horror. When Germany attacked, Sevastopol held out for 8 months before falling to the Nazis to be occupied until war's end. And the war's misery continued. Muslim Tartars, some of the earliest settlers of the peninsula, were accused by Stalin of collaboration and deported en masse to Central Asia, with nearly half dying of disease on the journey to exile in Central Asia. So, yeah, you have the Tartars as well. They're a minority there. And they probably prefer Ukrainian rule to Russian rule because of what I just mentioned. In fact, I know they do. But they are the minority. And these aren't the times of Stalin either. Now, yesterday it was interesting. There are reports that Russia had given Ukrainian forces in Crimea an ultimatum to surrender. And then there are reports that that had never happened. All kinds of back and forth going on, contradictory statements. And what's weird is you're watching this. You're seeing it unfold. And you actually seeing two commanders from two different sides shouting at each other. It's that close and intimate. Today they fired warning shots when Ukrainian troops tried to report to work, tried to leave their barracks and go to their base. They were turned back by the Russians. They refused to go back at first. Russians were saying, hey, are you trying to provoke us? And the Ukrainians are, how can we be provoking you? We don't even have guns. And then they started playing soccer. The Ukrainians started playing soccer while the commanders tried to work something out, and in the end, the Ukrainians just retreated. It's almost comical. But at one point, something, and it's amazing that you could be here and see this, literally on the front lines. At one point, one of the soldiers was saying, we shouldn't be doing this. We're brother nations. And he's right. This whole thing is really, really stupid. And cooler heads need to prevail. This is one thing. This is one thing that that we've gotten right here. Well, I don't know if we've gotten it right, but we've gotten it different. We don't have situations where these ethnic feuds last for centuries. We don't have that because we don't have history, and we're all the same pretty much. You know, look at your neighbor. Look at your neighbor who lives on the left side of your house. Look at the neighbor who lives on the right side. Look at the one who lives across the street. How many of them have lived their entire lives, well, in that house? Probably, definitely not, but in this neighborhood. How many of them have come from a different state? How many neighbors have you had that have moved to a different state? You know, we don't have the same kind of thing where, you know, we experience this anytime we go overseas, in Ireland, certainly, where people have the same house for hundreds of years, same neighborhood, certainly. That leads to a real sense of history, but it also leads to these kinds of conflicts where you identify people by their race, their religion, their nationality, and it really gets a bit silly. It's like, you know, if we gave the Statue of Liberty, wait, we did, didn't we? The Statue of Liberty is part of New Jersey now. See, I don't even remember this happening, but it did happen. It used to be part of New York, now it's part of New Jersey. We didn't fight a war over it. In fact, New York is saying, take Staten Island, and no problem. Go ahead. We don't fight battles over these things because, well, they are kind of meaningless. They should be meaningless. Doesn't make that much of a difference. And if it's what the people want, it's something that should at least be looked at seriously. Now, what I see happening here in Ukraine, I see a very big difference between what's happening in the East and what's happening in the West. There always has been a difference. If you had an election today, it's still quite possible Yanukovych would win because of the East. So it's really not in the interest of the people in the West to keep trying to deal with the situation in the East. What is the advantage? Well, maybe there's an economic advantage of some sort, but there certainly isn't a political advantage. And it's like what happened in Georgia, where there are these breakaway republics. You have South Ossetia, and there's the other one, too. Abkhazia. Yeah. Abkhazia and South Ossetia, two provinces that Georgia has no control over, and that Russia is occupying. Because under the Soviet Union, these areas had more autonomy. And the people there prefer Russian rule to Georgian rule. And in the war between Russia and Georgia, only a few years ago, they pretty much moved in and took over those places. No real advantage that I can see to holding on to unpopular areas where the people there don't want to be part of your country. Now, what can happen in Ukraine is that, yeah, you have what's known as a rump Ukraine, kind of like rump Yugoslavia when everybody abandoned and became independent. And somehow that was okay. We didn't seem to mind that, did we? But imagine a smaller Ukraine that is much more strongly pro-Western. And it would have a neighbor that is a more pro-Russian Ukraine. Yeah, it's an east-west divide, but let's not pretend there isn't an east-west divide already. This saves a lot of bloodshed and pretty much gives people what they want. Yeah, there are always going to be people who are unhappy. But I've not seen Russia express any interest in moving in on Kiev or the West. That would be a big deal. This, to me, not so much. Could have seen this coming a mile away. And You know, it's really interesting, too, looking at this, looking at the history and the geography. You realize just how many possibilities there are for new countries. For instance, I mentioned South Ossetia, which is part of Georgia, which Georgia has no control over. There's a North Ossetia as well. And that's in Russia. I looked this up. Ossetia, ethno-linguistic region located on both sides of the greater Caucasus Mountains, largely inhabited by the Ossetians. Yeah, the Ossetian language, part of the Eastern Iranian branch of the Indo-European languages family. The Ossetian-speaking area south of the main Caucasus Ridge is recognized by most countries as within the borders of Georgia, but under the control of the Russian-backed de facto government of the Republic of South Ossetia. The northern portion of the region, as we mentioned, is in the Russian Federation.
Hey, good show. Have a good night, everybody.
Oh, thank you, Kyle, for just jumping in. Hang on a second. Yeah, Kyle, I was in the middle of a rant, but I sure appreciate hearing your voice, and I'm sure our listeners do as well. Boy, this walkie-talkie app is pretty amazing. It's been fun having this for almost an entire week now. But yeah, please enjoy the rest of the show. Can you believe this? Nationwide, international walkie-talkies we have.
Well, sorry to interrupt. Continue. I'll keep listening.
Okay, over and out. wow.
Over and out.
Yeah. Imagine, and I've told like 45 people I have this thing now, so constantly the thing's going, and I sleep with the phone next to my head like everybody else does, so always getting up in the middle of the night to answer people. It's fine. So yeah, Ossetia, it could be a country. It could easily be its own country. Why isn't it? Iranian ethnic group. I mean, we don't even know about these places. And interesting thing here, too, is that in reading about this, I noticed that they have issues with people known as the Ingus people, the Ingush, I-N-G-U-S-H. I wasn't saying English, Ingush people. They're another native ethnic group of the North Caucasus, mostly inhabiting the Russian Republic of Ingushetia. They're predominantly Sunni Muslims, and they speak the English language. It's not part of Chechnya, which some people might think it is, or that similar. But the English and Chechen people are known collectively as the Vanak. This is like Game of Thrones or Star Trek or something. There are just so many regions and places that could become independent. Ingushetia, we could have a country called Ingushetia. Right now, they're a federal subject of Russia, capital of Magas. And, of course, Abkhazia, which I mentioned, the other province of Georgia, which is currently being held by Russia as well. But, okay, here's one that's really, really, really interesting. I'll bet you guys didn't know about this. There is a place in Russia called the Jewish Autonomous Oblast. Now, an oblast, that's like a province. It's a weird word, but that's what it means. But yeah, Jewish Autonomous Province. Did you know there was such a place? Yeah, there is. But it ain't Israel, okay? It's not even Williamsburg. It's really strange. I'd like to see this place sometime. It's another federal subject of Russia, which is another way of saying autonomous oblast, which is another way of saying autonomous province. They're in the Russian Far East. And it was established by Soviet authorities in 1934. It was a result of Joseph Stalin's nationality policy, which provided the Jewish population of the Soviet Union with a large territory in which to pursue Yiddish cultural heritage. Yeah. Can you believe that? But after Stalin died in 1953, The Jewish population in the Jewish Autonomous Oblast began a long decline. And currently the population over there, okay, is 160,185 ethnic Russians, 4,871 ethnic Ukrainians, 1,628 ethnic Jews. So clearly this is an oblast that did not catch on, but I did not know such a place existed. How weird is that? So yeah, there's a lot we don't know. There's a lot that isn't really being presented in an even-handed way by the media. I'm not in favor of really anything Vladimir Putin does, but I think we're the wrong country to be proclaiming moral high grounds based on the things that we've done in the past, things we continue to do in the present. And I think we need to look at this this whole situation in a calm perspective, with many voices, and be happy at the fact that nobody has been killed in this particular conflict. Obviously, a lot of people died in the square in Kiev, but now, in this next chapter of this whole escapade, for now, and hopefully next week when we meet again, it's been relatively peaceful. And I hope that cooler heads prevail, that we think of some good solutions to this, that, well, it's not going to make everybody happy, but it might be the fairest thing to do, and might be something that preserves a balance of power somehow. We have to remember, this isn't anything new over there. Russian influence has been there for a very, very, very long time. And just because John McCain is over there wanting a new republic that's pro-Western and right next door to the Russians and taking over one of their fleets, one of their harbors, one of their bases. No, it doesn't have to be that way. And, you know, Crimea has had aspirations of independence for quite some time. Maybe it's about time that we looked at that as a possibility. They had this thing called the Hymn of Crimea, and this is what we're going to go out with tonight. I'm sorry, we didn't get to phone calls, but I had so much to rant about tonight. Next week, I promise. But write to us. Write to us this week. Tell me how wrong I am. Tell me the history and how I misinterpreted and things like that. otw@2600.com. Remember, it's just one other perspective. You're not hearing a lot of perspectives on this. You're hearing the same thing pretty much over and over again. Let's at least think about this in different ways. The Hymn of Crimea, the official anthem of the Autonomous Republic of Crimea in Ukraine for now. And yeah, they were pretty autonomous. And I'm trusting YouTube here that this actually is the Hymn of Crimea, and with the internet you can never be sure. It was adopted after a contest held by the Crimean Parliament in February of 1992 and officially adopted October 18th, 2000. And may I ask that we all stand now for the Hymn of Crimea and that we hope for peace. This is Emmanuel for Off the Wall. I'm sorry, I didn't mean for that to start so quickly. I don't want to speak over it. Have a good night.